Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1999 with my best friend in a world we must defend here in 2020. I am one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Phil Iskov.
And with us today from the You're Missing Out podcast, a longtime correspondent of ours, Michael Natale.
Thank you, guys.
Not like Natalie the first time I pronounced it on the pod.
That's great. Natalie is good. Yeah, that was I remember that. That was a special moment.
I remember it too, especially for me because I hate pronouncing people's names wrong. So it's something that you got to get the person's name right. So when we had Okorete Onatawan, which I can pronounce now, I tried really hard to pronounce his name correctly, and I screwed up, and I will never forget it. So Michael Natale, You're Missing Out. Second podcast, new days for me and you. I'll be on your podcast talking about High Noon. But today we're talking, and Phil went on the podcast to talk about Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah. So I talked about Sunset Boulevard. Today, do you have a title for that podcast yet?
We're just sticking with You're Missing Out, as Kenny just said. Because if we weren't, then he would just be listing me from a podcast that hasn't put out an episode in a year.
I just wasn't sure if you guys were sticking with it.
That's You're Missing Out podcast. Yeah. But to complete my joke, we're working on, today we'll be doing a movie of similar stature, Pokemon, the first movie. Mewtwo Strikes Back, or Mew versus Mewtwo. I've seen both.
There's also Pikachu's Vacation.
The short film, which
also was a part of it.
I don't believe I saw.
I sent you a Dropbox with both Pikachu's Vacation and The Origin of Mewtwo, the prequel short that they thought was too depressing for the movie itself because it features a dead child.
I only watched the Pikachu Vacation. I didn't see that there was a second thing.
Yeah, shit gets dark.
I want to set this up as best as we can in terms of what we're doing today. You do the movies in 1999.
What are we doing today, Kenny?
You do the movies of 1999, and you make a deal with your partner. You put it out there in the world. I've often compared this to Sufjan Stevens' 50 State Project that I've always held against him for only doing two states. But we have decided to do, or committed to doing, every movie of 1999. And yeah. How could we not do a movie that debuted at number one in the box office and was for a period of time? Did it debut number one in the box office? I saw a look at it, Mike. Mm-hmm. It did. Yeah, okay.
It did.
And for a time was the highest grossing animated film of the year. Not only that.
About a month.
That's a time. Not only that. It was a cultural phenomenon. There was a video game revolution connected to this. It was one of the first mainstream pieces of Japan animation or anime, kind of. Don't think you call it that, but Mike will correct me on all that stuff. We have no choice but to do Pokemon. Phil and I are older than the Pokemon audience was, and Pokemon mythology passed us by. So without judgment, we had to bring on a younger man, Mike Natale, to help us through something that was very big in his youth. And then I found out yesterday it wasn't. So
no, it was. Excuse me. It was huge for me, man. It was fucking huge for me.
That's
good. All I said was, after a certain age, I didn't keep up with it anymore. And then when you told me, hey, you should come on and do this like a year and a half ago, I was like, fuck, I better know my shit. Because you guys
and he procrastinated. Yeah, we get granular. But he procrastinated until 3 days ago when he mainlined 24 Pokemon movies directly into his veins, like right Clockwork Orange style, I think. And
got the Steelbook right here, babies. Got the Steelbook right here.
Steelbook. So as I said to Phil over text, and I did clue Michael in on this, we're going to be leaning on you, a seasoned podcaster, to walk us through the world of Pokemon in and around Pokemon, the first movie, Mewtwo versus Mew / Mew Strikes Back / Pikachu's Day at the Park. So,
excuse me. Gentlemen, to be clear, it was Pikachu's Vacation, then Pikachu's Winter Vacation, then Pikachu's Rescue Adventure. Let's please get all of it right.
I want to pause for one quick second because it should be said.
You want to take a preamble, Mike, from my preamble?
A little bit. Mike, I think it's safe to say, was the first real diehard fan of our podcast.
That's true.
It needs to be said that he was one of the first people to like engage with us on Twitter, to engage with us on the movies. And, we're incredibly grateful for it. It's incredibly important. Obviously I was on your podcast for Bay Pig in the City, a far superior film to this one.
We got fighting words coming up.
You can fight me on it, but it's unimpeachably better than this movie. But more than anything, I just want to say, thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for your support. And it was great being on your podcast and just thank you.
I say the same thing. I that was cool. It was cool it's cool that you reached out. The coolest part about it was I do know the story of how you found us.
I don't know that.
I'm going to tell it, and then you can correct me. But I believe one day you were just looking for some hot Wild Wild West content on the net.
God damn right.
And you found our cast.
so if anybody who is listening does follow me on Twitter, I tweet about Wild Wild West a lot. It is a movie that means so much to me because it represents this golden time we can never have back. It's like my Brigadoon. Like, I just keep thinking about how we never get anything that stupid and upset. Like, come on. I would love a movie to just kind of
stupid. Yes! Yeah.
I want a $1 million production number on the MTV Movie Awards. I want Cisco to join in a song.
Okay.
I want that shit. You know, like, here's the thing, and this is what we're going to touch on, I hope, is that, and something that Pokemon also represents too, and why Pokemon Go was so huge. Is for people my age, I'm 30 now, which I fucking hate saying, but I'm 30 now. And
wait till you're 40.
Wait till you're 40, then you get back to me.
Kenny, the way things are going, it's optimistic to say any of us are going to make it to 40. So, chug a Heineken out of a Polyworld glass.
Some of us are already there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah. But no, so being there's something about, and I'll get into this more later, but you know, we were born in 1990, and everything kind of had its shit together somewhat, you know. And we got the slightest taste of what now feels like paradise, where there weren't real problems. And then, like, right, literally, for those of us who are 30, like, right at the time where your parents are turning around and going, hey, we should probably tell you, like, death is a real thing that's going to come to all of us, and also you're going to start getting these, like, tingling sensations in your body that are going to be the driving force of the rest of your life and probably ruin you. Also, oh, hey, all the rules you learned about how the world worked are completely turned on their head. 9/11 happens when you're 11 years old. You have no clue what the fuck's going on. And then when you start to get the balance again of like, oh, this is how the system works. I think I've worked out the new system. It's time for me to go to college because a college degree will be valuable. And if I go to college and I get a degree, I will get a job. And then the economic collapse of 2008 happens right when you're going to college. And now when you're at the point where you're 30, you find somebody you love, you're trying to start a family, you're trying to start a life, this shit happens. So every system has crumbled. And so something like Wild Wild West that to you guys is just insipid, to me, like, I can't help but look at it and be like, I would fucking love for something to be this
for you.
Insipid again.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you're getting at.
It's, okay. But you know, first of all, my condolences. Your life is terrible. but for real, I for whatever reason, and I think it's very strongly related to what you just said. And Phil, I don't know if you've noticed this.
I don't know.
But there does seem to be a bit of a gap in Hollywood around 27 to around 32 that I don't know a lot of people working in Hollywood between 27 and 32. And I do wonder if it's because of what Mike just pointed out. You know, I've read things from people who are around 30 talking about that same thing, that these three crises hit at very important moments in their life. For me and Phil, frankly, like, I couldn't be in a better position for these crises. The recession hit right before I had a lot of stake in the economy.
Same.
So I was kind of able to weather it. I had a steady job And I didn't have to worry about 401ks or planning for a family. And the pandemic is hit after I've kind of gotten to a place where I feel somewhat comfortable. But 5 years earlier, it would have been incredibly difficult. And I do think that people don't really appreciate the way your generation, and again, we're basically the same generation, but you're firmly millennial and I'm cuspy and Phil is, you know, fucking Gen X.
Trust me, we all know Phil is Gen X. We've seen his music taste and we know that. Yeah. No, listen, that's not knocking it at all, but like, you have the same music taste as the Gen X relatives that I have and all that I kind of grew up listening to on the side and like hearing.
Listen, I get it. I'm older than you guys. That's fine.
Phil is truly, and I think you should lean into this in your life and your writing and your work. You're the last of the Gen Xers.
Is that the gentrified version of the last black man in San Francisco?
It's just a guy
with a Slackers poster on the wall, just like
You are Phil, you worked in a video store.
Many video stores. Yeah.
You are the last of the Gen Xers, which I think is kind of cool.
Phil, if you think that this kind of ribbing is bad, I think that there's plans to bring my co-host on at some point, and that is going to be a nightmare for you. Yet.
Oh, Tom, come on!
I want Tom to come on for Beyond the Mat, which I can't wait.
Great, fantastic. I mean, I'll be silent for most of it, but I'll be there.
Like this podcast. It's just going to be all about you and your reaction to this insane subculture that's somehow taken hold.
Yeah.
That is why I have been unintentionally petitioning to do this since early on the podcast. The reason this all came about was that whenever Phil or one of you guys would tweet about a movie you're doing, like a great 99 movie, I would respond constantly with Pokemon GIFs. Because I'd be like, you got to have to do this. It's going to happen. And I know that Kenny, you will try, you know, that you would go into this and you would, you know, you got kids, you would try to grapple with it. And Phil, when it comes to these movies, I've listened to the show enough to know that he will, God bless him, give it the old college try. while watching and be like, sure, but that there will be, you know, and but if something doesn't click for you, Phil, like you're going to be like, you're going to openly admit, like, I don't.
It'll break his brain. I mean, it's just his brain is breaking.
So I've been
here's what I'll say. I got to defend myself a little bit here.
Yeah.
No. It's not. I'm not defensive. I'm just going to explain sort of my headspace about this, which is that generationally, that's definitely a part of it, right? Which is that I didn't care about Pokemon when it was big back in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s, mostly early 2000s. You know, I was in university at the time and didn't care. But there were people that did. So my first theatrical experience when it comes to Pokemon was seeing Detective Pikachu, what, last year or the year before? I don't remember when it was, but I guess
it was last year. I just rewatched it 3 hours ago. So,
okay. So, and I went to see that in the theater and I was excited to see it because I felt like there was this excitement brewing on Twitter and in the sort of film Twitter world of like, oh shit, this one's going to be good. Because there is a little bit of snobbery when it comes to the Pokemon content, not the games and the cards, which people are obviously big fans of,
for sure.
But the movies themselves have a little bit of that kind of stink on them for some people. So people were like, Detective Pikachu, and I was ready to I was ready to lock into it. I sat down. The movie's fine. It's not great. Like, I think it's fine. I think that Pikachu's great. Just overall, I just kind of was like, I didn't really get it because I don't really get Pikachu. So then I sat down and watched the first movie the other day and found myself equally disengaged. Like, maybe Pokemon's just not for me.
I believe I got an email from someone that said this was interminable.
Pikachu is for everybody.
I believe.
No.
I believe I got that email.
No. What was interminable was the fucking Vacation short, which was literally a series
masterpiece, despite
of noises and color. Noises and color. That is what that was.
Hey, yeah. Totoro don't fucking talk either, and he's great. That's all I'm saying.
I've seen installations that are just noises and color that I've just sat in some dark room looking at noises and color for hours.
Okay, fair point.
I'm with you.
Fair point. I'm with you,
Kenny. Pikachu's Vacation is like a Stan Bakosh film. I'm glad we're on the same page. Hollis Frampton. I'm on board.
Let's do a little Detective Pikachu first, because for at least our audiences of, you know, olds, everyone will be familiar with Detective Pikachu.
Excuse me, I know you have some younger audiences. I know you also have some notable audiences. I reported that back to Phil once. I don't know if he ever told you.
Who we can't say
to it. He did
James
tell him.
Franco?
Yeah. No, Jesus!
I'm kidding. I don't know if I did tell him. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, let's not include this in case. Well, I don't have the job anymore. Anyway, I used to work at a notable movie theater in Brooklyn, and Jesse Eisenberg came to visit one day. He was like doing some promo thing, and Kyle, our producer, was his liaison, and they were talking. They're talking about he was in our bar talking about like what a great year '99 was, and somebody should do like a show about that or a podcast. And Jesse Eisenberg went, oh, there is one. There's one about that already. And Kyle, like, bolted out of the room. He's like, you won't fuck him. He's like, no, he knows the name. He has it in him. So, yeah, he's, you know, so.
That's Jesse fucking Eisenberg. Cool. That's fucking
pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, you can leave that one in, guys.
Great. Yeah, because the worst that'll happen is my job won't hire me back after this. Hey, you know.
You have to worry about that.
Not because
I don't think that they're going to listen to this podcast. I think it's safe to say we're going to.
I don't know,
but I
who knows? Jesse Eisenberg listens. I don't know if you knew that. So wait.
They got bigger problems.
I want to talk Pikachu. About the
Pikachu.
All right, so Detective Pikachu. We talked a little bit with Jessica Ellis coming into this podcast because I'm of the opinion that you know, I know a little bit about Pokemon. I mean, you know, as I said, I've read this deluxe essential handbook of Pokemon, gotta catch them all, the need to know stats.
Okay, I wrote my own, so we're all set.
Yes, I've read it cover to cover, but I think Detective Pikachu leaves a newbie, a fresh viewer cold, because the world is impenetrable.
I agree.
And they start with, on top of that, like, if you don't know anything about this world, Mewtwo is impossible to understand.
Mm-hmm.
right? And they came into Detective Pikachu and was basically like, all right, here are the Pokemon, and then here's Mega Pokemon, and just go with it. So let's start from Detective Pikachu and say, Michael, what were your feelings about that movie? How do you think it kind of approached the Americanification or the Americanization of this property? Do you think it was successful in translating into American audiences, et cetera, et cetera?
Just to kind of lead into what you're about to say, you know, it should be said that there were things. I mean, the Ryan Reynolds of it all, and that was all an attempt at bridging. Correct? Is that what we're kind of saying? And when you ask about the Americanization, Kenny,
that's what I feel. I feel like it was explicitly made for an American audience, right? So, I mean, look, it's in English, so and it gave Pikachu, an obvious Japanese Pokemon, Ryan Reynolds' American accent, but there's a reason for that. But yes, yeah. So
I think here's my thing. I think that you guys are 100% right, hitting the nail on the head with the fact that yeah, it is a movie that is mostly impenetrable for people who aren't familiar with the property. But that's not really something I'm going to treat as a criticism, because if you went to see Star Trek Wrath of Khan, that movie is impenetrable to you if you don't know Star Trek. And you'd sit there and go, who the fuck is the guy with the pointy ear? I mean, Wrath of Khan, because I rewatched that recently because of this podcast. We'll touch on that in a second. Wrath of Khan literally just starts with Ricardo Montalban looking at Chekhov and being like, ah, yes, Chekhov, I remember you. And if you don't watch Star Trek, you're going, why? And if you do watch Star Trek, you're going, why? Because Chekhov wasn't in Space Seed. This doesn't make sense. But hey, whatever. You know, we're not here to get into the Trek of it all. it's a minor gripe.
One day I want to run
so many people on that fucking ship for that episode. They picked the one guy who is not in that episode. It makes no bad sense.
I now have to do Star Trek. Khan was in one episode of the original series.
Khan appeared in the episode Space Seed. And it was a very good episode.
One episode.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then they brought him back as the big bad in the second movie that has a continuous serialization?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it fucking rules. And the reason
he was
I
a big
this,
hit, though, right? Like, Khan was a big deal.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It was a great character, and that's why a bunch of people got really mad when it was Benedict Cumberbatch in the new one, and we all went, oh, come on. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's for a completely different show for me to get into the problems with Into Darkness and the fact that a Latino man magically turns white in the timeline. But hey, whatever. We're not touching it now. The thing about it is, the reason I even bring up Space Seed is the fact that Mewtwo does appear in the Pokemon show prior to the first movie. Mm-hmm. There is an episode called Showdown at the Poke Corral, which I watched, where you see
great title.
Pikachu.
Great title.
Phil, you have no idea. If you took a minute to look at Bulbapedia, the official Pokemon wiki, I think you would just lose faith in humanity with the shit that they do.
I have no doubt.
When Meowth goes to see the movie That Darn Meowth, oh, beautiful, perfect, amazing translations.
We're on topic. I just like when you get when we got. Okay. All I can think about is like we're never gonna make the diehards happy.
Well, because, here's the thing. I am coming at this from the vantage.
Were we trying?
I went full diehard.
I don't know.
And my goal here. Here's the thing, man. My goal here. I learned this shit. My goal is to come in here and give you guys the context that hopefully by the end, you know, that after the podcast number, we bump it up a little bit. I don't need it to be high, but I want to bump it up a little bit from where it is now.
That's what I'd like too.
You know, that's all I all I want, which is why
that's
you know,
not, I want to go on record and say that's a completely achievable goal.
I want to go on record and say this is the one time since we've been Zooming that Phil has sat back like Jerry Lewis on the fucking 39th hour of the telethon, picked his mic up off the mic stand and is holding it to his mouth every time he speaks. We are 20 minutes into this and he is done.
I said this on
that's
our
where
show.
We're at, guys. That's where we're at. It's that's where we're at with Pokemon. And
I
me.
Said this. I said this on our show, and I stand by it, even though Phil said he didn't have this experience. Phil and I's relationship now is like your freshman year college roommate, where you don't always have everything in common. You kind of wound up stuck together and you like each other, but the shit that that person does annoys you so much more than if somebody else would. If you had any other guest on this show for Pokemon, there's a chance Phil would be leaning forward going, that's an interesting point. I agree with you, but I'm here. And he's just leaning back like, all right, fucko, convince me. Let's do this.
Fucko. Hold on. Pump the brakes. I want to be very clear about something. You do not annoy me. Okay. That's not even accurate.
To disagree with that, but we'll get into that in
a second. Okay, listen, sometimes you say stupid shit on Twitter, and that's you're allowed to do that.
This is so good because we just did an episode, and I think it's actually going to air after this.
Yeah,
I'm going to say something that you guys won't love, but we just did an episode with Kemi Ando Catino, and Kemi is a friend of mine. This is going to our episode with her is going to air in a few weeks, but she hosted an Instagram show called It's a Vibe, where she gets two people to flirt on her Instagram. Sorry, Kemi, we're stealing your show right now.
Touche.
But no, this is to love Phil. Michael, you get him. You like to love Phil is to spar with Phil. To love Phil is to push Phil's buttons and have your buttons push back. Like I don't think
I push as many buttons as mine get pushed.
You do not. Not even close. The problem with our podcast, me and Phil, is that I thought it was going to be a series of arguments and a series of button pushing, but we have somehow, some way, just morphed into one person. We're now just one two-headed monster. So we don't fuck with each other as much as I thought we would. We're Bubba and Forrest Gump sleeping back to back in the mud now. So it's great to have someone on who can play this game with him because I can't anymore.
And that's crazy to me because when you were on our show yesterday, you said something about like, yeah, but like, you know, Phil's my podcast co-host. I can't fight with my podcast co-host. And Calm and I were like, what the fuck is he talking about? That's all we do. I've known that man for 10 years. Yeah. All we do is argue constantly about shit that does not matter. Anyway,
I mean, Kenny and I don't see eye to eye on some stuff. And that, enough stuff that I think hopefully it keeps our episodes interesting. But I just want to be very clear about something here, okay? I don't dislike you, Mike, at all.
And
now, whether or not you say some annoying things or have committed to a bit that I think is, I don't know, not the best, is fine. That's your prerogative. You're allowed to do that.
Here's where the conflict comes from.
Is the Wild Wild West bit?
Yeah, yes. It's just a true, it's sincere love.
It's not a bit. I believe.
You want me to get my fucking signed VHS by Barry Sonnenfeld? I got it right behind me. Signed VHS.
Here's where you don't seem to get what I'm saying. That's a commitment to the bit. Like, yeah. I think you're fully committed to it, but it's still a bit. And that's a bit that I think why you like the movie, but you know.
There's a wrestling term called working yourself into a shoot. And that's when, you know, every wrestling character starts as obviously a character. Jake the Snake Roberts is not actually a man who, like, you know, owns snakes. He's a man.
He's not a snake?
He's a man whose name rhymes with snake, right?
Sure.
Someone early on said, we should call you Jake the Snake, and you should have snakes on your tights. And he said, sure. And eventually, he started believing it. And he started saying, I am actually a snake man. And like he has been like one of the preeminent snake people in the country for the last 30 years. And Mike has done the same thing. Initially, he's like, wouldn't it be funny if I was a Wild Wild West super fan? But now he can't even see past it.
I have 2 points I need to raise. One, that's not quite how it happened. How it happened was.
I know. I just wanted to do
how,
that.
But how it I happened was the different you. Thing. It's a thing that people my generation are experiencing a lot, which is not like super ironic. But just something comes up from the 90s that we just go, oh my God, remember how this used to happen? Like, and it is, it's a memory of the, it's like having memories of the old country. It's like remembering Onatefka. Like I keep thinking like, oh, we used to do this. We used to have these moments. Is this, you know, like it's just like the future generation will never understand. I at my old movie theater, I did an employee screening of Wild Wild West, and I went all the fuck out, and the younger people didn't understand, and I was like, no, this is just, this was a magical thing that happened once upon a time, that Will Smith was such a big name that they would just give him any script, even if it made no sense for him. And we all showed up. We just did it. Like, it was our patriotic duty. Like, it was a beautiful thing. Yeah. We don't have that. And so, you know, that now the other point that I want to raise is, Phil, you're right. Okay. I don't think you hate me. I think the issue is, and we've discussed this before, our podcast, part of the reason that we became so friendly, like our show and your show, was our podcast has a very similar dynamic to yours. Tom, and my co-host, is very much Kenny. They're very, you know, and that's why that's
I've heard
Tom.
their laughter is decidedly
similar. We got on famously. I love that guy.
It was amazing. The reason Kenny's even bringing up Beyond the Mat is I made a joke about, hey, if you need someone from Beyond the Mat, Tom's there, and it became that Step Brothers gif of, did we just become best friends? And I could have just muted the mic right then. But so to be clear, like, I have always been, from a fan perspective, like, I've been a Phil guy. I connect with Phil's opinions a lot, you know, and I kind of, when Tom's the Kenny guy, and we have similar vibes. So why I think we're conflicting, Phil, is it's like, you have to imagine that you're, I don't know, a Pikachu, and I'm a clone Pikachu.
Oh,
and we're
right.
Just so similar that we have to battle. And to that I say, Phil, brother, my brother, tell me, what are we fighting for? Tell me.
I have no idea what's happening right
now.
That
is a song.
You can sing!
You know, only songs by Blessed Union of the Soul. Only songs. Do I know the band name? Yes. Did I find their Twitter account, almost follow, and then saw it posted a bunch of weird right-wing shit? Yes. Oh, boy.
You're too young for Hey Leonardo?
Hey, I know Hey Leonardo. Yeah, right, and she likes me for And I Believe was the other one, right? Do you remember that? And I Believe, right? Yeah.
Okay. So I'm gonna read the synopsis of Pokemon the first movie to our audience.
Is it all right? May I throw one thing out there?
Absolutely.
That I'm so sorry. I do want to kind of give just a quick bit of context on Pokemon as a force in the year 1999, so that we understand how this movie came to be. Is that all right?
Great.
We'd love that.
Go for it. We love it.
Because I have right here a timeline of everything released in every year.
Okay.
And the reason I think this is impressive is we have to remember that Pokemon is, to this day, the single most successful media franchise. This is 100% true. It's the most successful media franchise. More than Mickey Mouse, more than any of that. It's the most successful media franchise. And what's more impressive about that...
Do we have a number to associate with that or no?
I could look one up, man. Okay.
Say that something's the most successful media franchise, I just wanted to sort of...
There is a number. I don't have it offhand. I remember going through...
It's probably like $1 trillion or something like that.
I mean, so... And the most thing that's most impressive is, if you think of the other major franchise from my generation that was kicking off at this time, which is Harry Potter, mm-hmm. I think about the fact that around this time, around 1999, where I was still here in Massapequa, Long Island, around 1999, I remember a school librarian going, hey, you should read these books. There's like three of them already. You should check them out. And then when the fourth book was coming out, they started doing the midnight releases. By the fifth book, you know, there were lines for it. By the sixth book, you had to get a wristband days ahead of time. Pokemon hits the U.S. It's released in Japan in 1996, hits the U.S. in 1998. By 1999, let's take a look at...
Can I pause you for one quick second? Because I have a number that I just want our audience to know, that by Pokemon is worth $92 billion.
If I had that number off the top of my head, I had gone too far down the rabbit hole.
I didn't expect it of you. That's a shit ton of money.
$92 billion for a fucking brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
anyway, continue. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump
in. It does not hit the U.S. until 1998. And in just 1 year, okay, you've got the show that had aired in syndication for 40 episodes now gets an exclusive deal with Kids WB. Pokemon, the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back, is released in the U.S. To promote the film, a Boeing 747 that has been repainted to have the Pokemon on it lands at JFK Airport. Burger King introduces 57 different kids' meal toys, a whole bunch of cards. They had... cups, crowns, all that shit.
They kill children, by the way.
Yes, I'm glad you had that one. I got that. Two kids suffocated on the top of the Pokeballs that came in. They had to put holes in them at Hasbro. You've got 23-carat gold-plated cards of Burger King. What?
Was there a Charizard in there?
So you've got, Pokemon Yellow is released here. Pikachu and Jigglypuff appear in Super Smash Bros. Pokemon Stadium is released. Pokemon Pinball, Pokemon Snap. These are all games. A rhythm game called
All
Dance
in 99.
Pikachu. All in 99. Pokemon Snap kiosks open in Blockbuster so you could bring your cartridge and print out the pictures you took. Pokemon Print Studio. The first 1,500 customers at every Toys R Us in the United States on November 26th got little cards that could give them a Mew in their game. The same is true for Canada, Phil. I looked that up too for you.
I appreciate
that. December 99 issue of Nintendo Power features a Mew and Pikachu giveaway. The Pokemon League does a tour to 8 states in 99. The Pokemon Monopoly is released. Pokemon Yahtzee Jr., the Pokemon trading card game comes out. You've got Bean plush toys. You've got Pez dispensers. Pokemon Fruit by the Foot fruit rolls. You've got Pokemon fried rice seasonings. Pokemon appears on the cover of Time magazine. I could keep going. Gentlemen, there are three pages of shit.
I don't, that came out, but I want to just, I'm going to pause you for one quick second because I want to kind of like, there's a part of me that just wants to say, like, I can't even process the sheer enormity of this franchise. And yet, and it does well here, and we'll talk about its box office in a second, but like, I don't even really know that I even understand the phenomenon that it was overseas and how well that translated to here. Like, you say $92 billion, and I'm going to assume that like 80% of that is overseas money, right? I mean, something to that effect. Like, this is a phenomenon here, but it's a little different. I mean, Kenny, you have kids, and we had Rollins on at the beginning to talk about sort of his affection for the franchise, but like, is it, I don't know, like, is it a
Pokemon,
big deal here?
Pokemon
in that way?
Is a rite of passage now.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So okay. Pokemon, there is a almost like a graduating steps thing.
Sure.
Okay. Now kids basically start, and I could do it because I have so many children. You're basically starting with your Peppa Pigs now and your PJ Masks and your Paw Patrols, and that's what my 3-year-old is on. And then they get into, you know, Mickey Mouse and Mickey Mouse Clubhouse and little, you know, at some point when fighting gets introduced into their lives,
Turtles
and this. And then they enjoy that shit for a while. And now Rollins is too sophisticated and watches The Simpsons. But
the reason I asked the question, and this is obviously posed to you as well, Mike, but like, there's something going on in the Venn diagram of Pokemon, which is that it speaks to younger kids, but it also speaks to anime fans, and it speaks to it breaks out of that. Like, there's a young component, and then there's like an older component above like teenagers. So there's like a gap in there where I'm assuming it doesn't speak to you as much. But the anime component I want to talk about for a second, because that to me, watching the movie the other day, that was the thing that really kind of hit me the most, which was like, I love Miyazaki. I loved Your Name. Like, there's a lot of anime, or Akira. Like, there's a lot of anime that I think is fantastic. This straddles those two worlds that I imagine, if it hits you in the right way, could be like groundbreaking.
Well, I let me touch on this a little bit. By the way, we didn't even get to the Radio City Musical production, but you know, hey, that's Pokemon Live. That's not only was that real, Kenny. Do you know who played the role of James from Team Rocket in Pokemon Live at Radio City Music Hall in the year 2000?
How could
Ryan
you know?
Ryan Reynolds.
Close. Andrew Rannells.
That is pretty close.
Tony nominee Andrew Rannells.
I wonder how old Andrew Rannells James. Was. That's amazing. But
he was definitely young, and he seems like he hates it.
As you know, I have some questions about Team Rocket.
We're going to get into him. Yep. Did I that's the beautiful thing is Kenny was messaging me like a bunch of questions, like, why does this talk? Who is this guy? And Phil, the only correspondence I got was, this was insufferable.
Well,
I knew what I was getting into.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. One thing I found out just through my own research, because to be clear, I'm not really an anime guy. As much as I just binged 24 of these fucking movies, like, I'm
interesting.
Really not much of an anime guy. I don't watch much of it. I'm a Studio Ghibli fan because my girlfriend and I she's just discovering that for the first time. So I'm revisiting those and I enjoy those. But I had a moment because anime there was a weird, like, almost British invasion thing in the late 90s.
There's a rite of passage.
Because of Pokemon. Yeah. Well, not just rite of passage. Yeah. It was that When I in the early 90s, Saturday morning cartoons were these very well produced. I mean, Disney was making the Disney Afternoon, and Warner Brothers was dumping a lot of money. Steven Spielberg was making like Animaniacs and shit. And like Saturday morning cartoons were where the money was, so that was where the money went. And then because, in no small part because of the company that did the dubbing for Pokemon, 4Kids Entertainment, which is now defunct, they had the idea of, fuck it, let's just, this is big, let's just get this show, translate it on the quick, change some shit so that kids will understand. Like, we're going to take the fact that Brock makes rice balls and we're going to call them donuts because who gives a shit? And then let's syndicate it. And that becomes so huge that by the end of the 90s into the 2000s, the majority of Saturday morning cartoon programming is just dubbed anime. All this stuff is getting imported from the big hits like the Pokemon League and the Dragon Ball Z to stuff that no one remembers now because it was so much cheaper to do. And so someone my age, there was a point where I could have become that person. I watched Dragon Ball Z because that was, you know, the more grown-up show. That was, if you want to talk about like the teenager thing, you evolved from Pokemon, to use the term evolved, you evolved from Pokemon to Dragon Ball Z because that was a more, you know, that was a more soap operatic storytelling.
Sure.
And I did that, and I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Was a little bit, I followed because but once that happened, I aged out of that shit because there's a line where you can either become an anime person or not. And sometimes, especially if you're a guy who goes to a comic con or something, like, you don't want to be on the other side of that line.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, it's same with like the manga stuff also plays into this. But I also just want to say that, and this pulls into what you were just saying, Mike, that the budget for Pokemon, the first movie, is $5 million, right? Like, that's
all
nothing.
On the screen.
Yeah.
It's
in $5 million. Not all on the screen. They cut a lot.
They make $172 million on a $5 million investment in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's shocking to me how, I mean, this property is like some sort of lightning in a bottle that just people can't get over.
I want to kind of make one more kind of like larger, more macro point about this phenomenon you're talking about. Because every once in a while, and I'd say almost, let's put it differently. At all times, there are one or two media phenomenon that Hollywood or the rest of the media just can't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I would say TikTok is that, right? That people in Hollywood look at TikTok and they're like, what is this thing that's happening? How can we get involved? We don't understand it. So you have a situation where a very good friend of mine is a radio host in LA, and they want to put this popular TikToker as his co-host, as if that's a thing. But Hollywood doesn't begin to understand how to turn TikTok into money for them. Pokemon was like that, where Pokemon had almost this shadow group of almost forgotten consumers, or people who weren't being fed enough, who were able to support this massive industry that Michael just laid out. And I think that that's an interesting thing, that basically Hollywood almost never are the ones that are breaking the mold, pushing the envelope, finding something new. And I think Quibi's a pretty good fucking example of that. When we try and fail miserably, we're almost always chasing, you know, the dragon. And we often don't even understand what's going on. And that's part of what I want to do with this podcast. Understand what it is about this property that got people by the fucking lapels.
Well, let me speak a little bit, because I did some research into why it became a thing to begin with. Because obviously it came here and it was fucking huge instantly. What was weird is I feel like for a lot of people my age, the cartoon came first. Whereas in Japan, the game came first. And I was reading about, and I'm certainly not Japanese. I don't know much about the history, so I'm going to be going off of what I read, and I apologize.
When you say the game,
yeah.
When you say the game, Michael, do you mean the card game or the video game?
So what happened was there was apparently, from what I gathered, during the 90s, there was a period of massive economic decline in Japan that they refer to as the lost decade.
Yeah.
And in response to that economic decline came something called the healing boom, which is similar to what we kind of termed as like self-care, and that became a big thing here. And what happened was consumers were really craving interaction and intimacy. Instead of just buying shit, you know, they wouldn't just settle for like Hello Kitty on a backpack now. They wanted something they could interact with, and the cafes spring up and things like that. The beauty of this game and what made it stand out so much is the creator, who is Satoshi Tajiri, had this idea. He loved collecting bugs as a kid. And he thought there was something to the idea of, instead of it just being a fighting game, people wanted mm-hmm. something they could nurture. Tamagotchi comes out around the same time. And he gets this idea that it's not just about fighting. You could have the fighting components. You could have your Street Fighter Tekken elements in this, right? But you could also go on an adventure. It was all about traveling from town to town, these early games. So it's that you get that Zelda, that kind of quest element, you know. But then on top of that, there is this collector element, because yes, you want to go to the 8 different gyms. That's the way the game is structured. There was Pokemon Red and Pokemon Green were the first 2 games. And they were structured in a way that what you did is you would go out, your goal was to go to 8 different gyms, collect their badges for beating the gym leaders, and the goal was you could go to the big championship, the Elite Four, and win that. But along the way, you're catching these Pokemon. Right, you're going out the fields, you're catching them. So there's an exploring element, and there's a zoological element, and all the different Pokemon have strengths and weaknesses, and there's animal shit to learn from them. What was most interesting about this, though, and why it ties into this Lost Decade thing, mm-hmm. is that they produced Red and Green, and only certain Pokemon were available in each game. You could not actually catch all the Pokemon from just one game. Now, here in the U.S., when we got them here, and they were called Pokemon Red and Blue, here in the U.S., our cynical parents all looked at that and went, oh, this is just a cash grab. It's to get you to buy 2 games. But it's not. It was created because they had these little link cables. And what you had to do was, if you had Pokemon Green, you were a kid in Japan, you were forced, in a time where you were pretty antisocial, you were forced to go out and find someone who had that other game and make friends and interact with them so they could trade Pokemon with you so you could get them all. So that is very tied into why this is so big. And I think why it lands here is the fact that there are so many elements in this particular franchise that if you are a person who likes fighting, like Kenny was saying, if you're into fighting, it's a rite of passage. Yeah, there's a combat element. But if you mm-hmm. are a person who is really into animals and you are a kid who really loves, you know, what your young brain understands is zoology, you are so drawn to the fact that all these different creatures have parallels in the real world and you're learning how to best nurture them and feed them and breed them to the point where, and I'm just going to make this note, at my childhood nature preserve, there's a right here in Massapequa, there's a nature preserve called Takapusha. Nice little place. I used to go there a lot when I was a kid. One time I came back to the island and I went there, and throughout the museum, throughout the preserve, are these little Pokemon figures for kids to find, and they play Pokemon movies in their little lobby, because it is, while we can talk about it as like a gateway to anime, for a lot of people, anybody that I went to college with who was going for biology or earth sciences of any kind, this was their entry point, because it was a way right. to understand an environment. So there is, it's one
well,
of these
I think
things-
that I to yeah, I mean, to answer your question, Kenny, in terms of like how this became the global phenomenon that it became, I can't help but look at what Mike was just saying as the game forcing you to engage with other people creates this, and forgive it, but a bit of a virus, right? Like, it becomes this thing that can kind of spread relatively easily. If we're talking about the beginning,
at the sort of the inception point. Now, how it grows beyond that, in my opinion, is it's the expansion into different types of merchandise, different types of things, the cards, but what have you.
Well, I think there's also... I'm sorry.
I'll just speak from experience as a, you know, a father, and I never even considered this until you just said it. But Rollins's first friendships, who are still his best friends, were based on trading Pokemon cards.
Really?
So in kindergarten, yes, they were based on trading Pokemon cards. His relationships with his two cousins, who are right around his age, was initially like what their breakthrough, because it wasn't so good when they were little. Their breakthrough was Pokemon cards. So the social aspect of it, which, you know, I think a lot of parents look at, me, you know, included, as a cash grab, I think you're making some really strong points. I mean, I'm sure the zoological shit's true too, but for my kid, and he's not particularly antisocial, shy kid, but it's tough to make friends all the time. You need some icebreaker. This was an icebreaker.
Here's the other thing. It also was a thing that for people our age, it was a way, and I read some studies talking about this too, it was a way to grapple with your own identity. And not in some, you know, grandiose way, but the fact is, when you play, if you're a little kid and you're playing Star Wars, right? You got to basically make a binary choice. Am I the, you know, do I like the Empire or the Rebels? And then you get like five or six characters that you can go, I like Darth Vader, I like Boba Fett, whatever. Pokemon has, in that first generation, and there's more since, but has 150 or 151 distinct characters of different, well, hang on, hear me out, of different animal types or of different skill sets, whether it's grass or water. They have, to some degree, very broad, but they have personality types in these characters. And if you are a kid, it is that if you're talking to a friend, instead of going, oh, who do you like? Oh, I like Darth Vader. Well, I like Luke Skywalker. You suck, or whatever like that. A kid could turn around and go, my favorite Pokemon is Charmander. And while that could just be one thing, that kid likes fire. That kid likes something that's bold. That kid's a little more aggressive. And if another kid says, I like Bulbasaur, that's plant-based. That's a lot more healing. That's a lot more reserved. So a more, you know, Wells for Boys type kid like me gravitated toward that. And even from the way those games start and you get to choose Charmander, Bulbasaur, Squirtle. So you're choosing fire, water, plant. It's letting you pick a lane where there's no wrong answer. It's not that there's, you know, the aggressor, and if you're not the aggressor, you fucking suck.
Yeah, there's also no value judgment. Yeah,
You can control your, you can build your Pokemon team around your personality. You can be drawn to these. And it was a way for, I was not a masculine kid, an aggressive kid, you know, and I gravitated toward the Pokemon that were more, you know, a little more like calm and reserved. You know, I like the water. I like to kind of, you know, heal things up. I gravitated toward that. And that became a way that I could express myself with my peers who were very different, and it was still valid, and it was still okay. And so it gives kids this very diverse outlet to be, to find a form of self-expression in. If you like, if you say Jigglypuff is your favorite Pokemon, you can make an argument for why Jigglypuff is your favorite Pokemon, because, oh, she uses her song and she sleeps. And no kid, you know, kids aren't going to give you shit for that. And it's so hard when you're a little kid to kind of find what works. I mean, we talked yesterday on my show, we talked about wrestling. I did not watch wrestling as a kid because I was not, again, I was not a masculine kid. And I got a lot of shit for that, that I didn't know who wrestlers were, because all the kids would, like, you know, beat me up or whatever and be like, oh, man, you girl, you don't like this stuff. Then, of course, when I became an adult, I watched wrestling and went, oh, this is the, you know, campiest shit in the world. So I came around to it. But with Pokemon, every child, every person, if they engage with it, they have an entry point. If you were my dear friend Carrie, who Phil has spoken to a couple times, very kind to them, you know, she was a real spooky goth kid, right? There are ghost Pokemon. And you can be a kid who, if you have nothing else, you can gravitate to. And if you're a fucked up dark kid.
So is that
kid,
like the, that's like the goth Pokemon?
There is a Pokemon
that's
called,
that's the one that
Cubone.
Phil wants, but it's not the one he would have chosen.
Phil, there is a Pokemon. There's a Pokemon called Cubone. It's a little tiny Pokemon who wears a big skull on its head. That's the skull of its dead mother that it wears to honor it. This shit can get dark, man. And like, but like, kids find a way to express themselves through that. And I think that there's something And I don't get me wrong, you can market the shit out of that, and you can be as crass and commercial as you want, because you know what? If people like Eevee, you can bang out so many plushes and figures of Eevee, and people will buy it up because it's a way to express themselves, and it's something.
I think there's absolute credence to what you're saying. I think that the spectrum of characters that exist, I think that the wealth of world that exists in it, I think all of that stuff completely. There's no question that that's a part of its longevity and part of its success. So I'm going to give a synopsis of this movie.
An hour in, I'm so sorry, like, guys.
I'm going to try anyway.
Hey, you're a fan. You know what we do.
When a group of scientists are offered funding into genetic research if they agree to try and clone the greatest ever Pokemon, Mew, the end result is success and Mewtwo is born. However, Mewtwo is bitter about his purpose in life and kills his masters. In order to become the greatest, he throws open a challenge to the world to battle him and his Pokemon. Ash and his friends are one of the few groups of trainers who pass the first test and prepare for battle. However, they soon find out about further cloning and Mewtwo's ultimate plan for the Earth. Pokemon the first movie opened on November 12, 1999 in first place with $31 million against Dogma, The Messenger, Anywhere But Here, and Light It Up. What a weekend. It would go on to make $172 million on a $5 million budget. It has 15% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics and 63% from audiences. I'm going to read a chunk of Ebert's review because I think it'll encapsulate in a lot of ways what people, critics specifically, but what people were grappling with in North America with this property. Ebert said, the easiest way to understand Pokemon is as a major factor in the U.S.-Japanese balance of trade. It begins as a Nintendo Game Boy game and has since proliferated into spin-offs, clones, ancillary rights, books, videos, TV shows, toys, trading cards, and now this movie. All of this even though nobody over 12 seems to be able to explain the Pokemon universe coherently. In the online magazine Salon, for example, Cynthia Joyce interviewed a 10-year-old named Sean Levine who loves Pokemon. Cynthia asked him, can you explain to me in simple terms what the game is about? To which Sean said, well, it's not just a game, it's a whole world. There are TV shows, comic books, little figures, and card game, but my favorite is probably the Game Boy game and the card game. The goal is to get 151 types of Pokemon, and that's the red and blue version. In the new versions, there are 250 types of little creatures. I collected the cards. I have the red version and the blue version so I can get all the Pokemon I need. Some Pokemon cards are actually worth a lot. For example, if you have a first edition Charizard.
This is what I've been waiting a year and a half for.
It used to sell it for over $99. The interview was long, but no more helpful. The animation is bright, colorful, and vibrant. It's eye candy. The story seems thin, especially compared with other Japanese anime titles such as My Neighbor Totoro. The story is idiotic. The individual Pokemon have personalities that make the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles look like Billy Crystal. Kids will no doubt love this movie because they can see action involving figures they've collected. I can't recommend this film or work up much enthusiasm for it because there is no level at which it enriches a young viewer by encouraging thinking or observation. It's just sound and light show linked to the marketing push for Pokemon in general. I may have completely bypassed the point and misinterpreted crucial Pokemon lore. This may disqualify me from ever becoming a Pokemon trainer. I can live with that. Now, I'm going to say one other thing before I'm going to let you respond, Mike.
Oh, he looks angry.
No, I'm.
Hold on. Yeah, let me. Now, The Guardian said the film is humorless, boring, impenetrable, and with animation of such staggeringly low quality that it constitutes an insult to cinema goers of all ages. Now, reviews of the original Japanese version were very positive due to the film's emotional impact, its exploration of ethical topics such as cloning and genetic modification. However, the philosophical themes were criticized for being difficult to pick up due to their complex presentation, especially for film animated at children. So I just want to say that there is a cultural barrier here, which is that this film, you saw the Japanese version, and we thank you for sorting it out and finding it. Because what it feels like is a rush job, right? Like America saw a very successful property overseas. They were like, fuck it. We got to get in on this. They invest a nominal amount of money in the greater scheme of things into this film. And it works like gangbusters. The game takes off here. Everything takes off here. It all does very well. The movie does very well. But the movie feels like a bastardized version of not just this Japanese movie, but of a deeper, richer mythology and you know, universe.
Okay, so a couple things. One, I'm very shocked that the man who went to his grave saying no video game could ever be art took problem with this film. That's amazing. Here's my thing. Here's my thing I'm going to say with Ebert.
Here's my just a quick kick to Roger Ebert's tombstone before you continue. Yes.
We do it
all the time. It's one of our bits.
Of course, of course.
I'm going to die way less known than him. What's my little jab going to do? It doesn't matter. He's going to be the Pauline Kael of my generation, and I'm not going to matter. I don't give a shit. Go to hell, buddy. Here's my thing with that kind of take. Here's my thing with that kind of take to begin with. And we were talking about this yesterday, because I don't mean to sound like I'm doing a self-promo, but like, with this new version of our podcast that we're doing, our goal is we are looking at classic films and we are coming at it from the angle that these films inherently have value. We are coming at it and we are saying, regardless of what we think, we have to understand that the thing is not to go in and go, I think this is bad, but to go,
right,
people think this is good. If I don't think it's good, I need to figure out what I'm missing. And so here's an example. Recently during quarantine, do you know what I've started doing? Because I'm unemployed. I started playing Fortnite.
I don't.
Now, Fortnite is a game that's popular with the young folks. I didn't fucking understand it. I felt I was too old to get it. There's this thing. I kept trying to turn it on, and like every time I die in 5 minutes, I didn't fucking get it. And I was getting so mad because I'm like, this is stupid. And then I kind of had to have a conversation with myself and go, no, it's the fact that I came into this not willing to engage with it on its level. There's two ways to go into something. You can either go in with the earnest intention of, okay, let's see what this is about. Or you can go in the exact same wording, but very jaded, and go, all right, let's see what this is about. And it's it's hard not to do that. There's shit I do that with. I can't wait until 5 years from now when I can actually watch Fleabag and know if I like it or not. Because right now, because of Twitter, I am so fucking sick of hearing about Hot Priest and Jumpsuit that I know that if I watch it now, I'm not going to enjoy it because I'm just going to be going into it from an angle of, all right, what's the big fucking deal with this thing?
So, I do love that our listeners are getting hot Fleabag takes on our Pokemon episode.
I you know what? She's the child of Landed Gentry. What's she going to do? I'm nothing. It doesn't matter.
You're 1,000,000% right.
And so, like, Hearing that Ebert review.
Doesn't agree, obviously, but you're 1,000,000% right.
The thing with that Ebert review is my thing is he went in, as most of these people did in America, as most critics and parents did in America, which is that they heard all about this and it annoyed the shit out of them. The idea that it was so popular and they didn't get it. And then they went in with this stance of what's the big fucking deal? And they were ready, as happens with a lot of popular things, ready to go. Like, how annoying is it when you know people on Twitter who kind of, like, during the finale went, I've never even watched a single Game of Thrones. Fuck you. Who gives a shit?
Your opinion is cool.
Like, I don't like sports that much, but I hate those people at a Super Bowl party who's like, I don't even know which team is which. So then why are you proud of that? So for me with Pokemon, when he quotes that article where the kid is interviewed, right? Yeah. And the kid and he's like, yeah, I read that whole interview. I didn't know anything. You know, I knew less than I knew to begin. He's laying all that shit out. That kid is giving you so much information in that screed. And if you took the time to actually look at that and go, huh, that's, if nothing else, the idea that there's these games and you have to connect them to catch, that's interesting. If you tried to find an in on this, then that could get there. But it's very clear from the way he's writing that, as he would write his takedowns when he wasn't vibing with something, that he didn't hear it. And for me, like, part of what happened with, yes, you're right, there were changes from the Japanese version to the English version, and the Japanese version is a far superior film. I don't think it's just a rush job. I think there was complications about, hey, we need to translate this to an American audience, and there's a 3-minute portion where Mewtwo thinks he's an abomination because he was not created by God. How are we going to translate that to American audiences? We're in so much trouble right now that the next year in 2000, the Vatican has to issue an official statement that Pokemon is not demonic. That's how big it was. The Vatican had to weigh in. You think they're fucking with God shit in this one? No, they're not. You think they're going to start a movie with a little girl dying? They're not going to do that.
I want to talk about Michael's big kind of the meat of that diatribe. because I think you know that's you're hitting me right in the heart. That's my kind of life plan, and that's why I like this podcast and all podcasts that come at shit from a open perspective, right? And there is room for the how did this get made and all that of the world and in general. Like, if you want to punch up, I mean, we started this podcast punching up at American Beauty, so it's fine to do that. But it's so much more interesting to me to be a cultural detective and try to figure out what it is. And what I've noticed, and Phil, I bet you've noticed this too, is every time we have someone who has really done the work, like Michael's done the work on Pokemon, on a property we don't really get. And I would include the Muppets in that. And I would include, you know, what Griffin's done. And I would include when we had Miguel Heron on for Mononoke and a lot of other things. When we had Eric on for the Golden Globes.
And Eric for Phantom Menace. I felt that way.
And Eric Carrasco for Phantom Menace. When we had people on who do – and when we had – who did Anywhere But Here? I'm sorry.
Oh, Rochelle Lefebvre.
When we had Rochelle on for that, like, we had people – who come in and do the work and explain to us why this means so much to, if not them, but so many people. It's almost always more interesting than it's, and I don't mean this, I'm not trying to throw shade at you. It's always more interesting than lights and color, fighting, cool guns, and shit like that. And like, it.
I wasn't trying to be reductive.
No, I don't know. And again, I'm not trying to throw shade, but often what I find is it's actually incredibly profound. Right?
For sure.
I've been like Michael's initial kind of breakdown of why Pokemon's popular is profound. Just like I think Griffin's breakdown of like why the Muppets speak to him is profound, even though it seems kind of crazy. And in general, when these child-centric properties cross over to grown-ups, whether it be this or Avatar or Avatar Last Airbender or My Little Pony or regular show or fucking what's the one with Finn and Adventure Time. Whenever these properties cross over Steven Universe, it's because they're profound. Because they really, and you know it as a kid, but you can really break it down as an adult and it really can like get to the middle of you. And that's why I like wrestling, because at its core, at the best version of it is profound. So.
And can I say, it's funny you mentioned Adventure Time, because that's what changed my personality and how I approach things. When I was in college, I was in film school and I was I'm still a miserable prick, but I was worse then. And I was a real miserable son of a bitch. And anything that I didn't automatically like, I was like, fuck this. And I remember I ran an art literature magazine on campus, and we had a bunch of freshmen come in. And it was crazy because they're freshmen, I'm a senior. There shouldn't be that much difference, but it felt like an entire generation because the shit that they grew up on, I did not have that language. I was too old for Teen Titans, right? My DC animated show was Batman the Animated Series. They're coming and talking about the fucking Teen Titans, and it was crazy to me. Because I'm like, I should know this, but it's so weird I don't have to touch on it. And one of the things that they loved was Adventure Time. And it looked, from the outset, it looked so stupid to me. Any clip I saw online looked so stupid to me and so random and nonsense. And I happened to end up, it's because there was a girl, because there's always someone.
Always a girl.
And I was like, she's into this, so I need to learn what the fuck this is. I started watching it, and Kendra, it is profound. It's a beautiful show. It is very moving. It's very deep. And the fact that I was depriving myself of that by deciding that I was better than that, or deciding that I didn't want to engage with that, or that it was just kid shit, man, I was missing out on something that I now think is truly, and that's
when I would actually to piggyback on that, I would say that there are a lot of people that paint animation as a whole with a giant brush that, you know, I have friends who I very much respect their opinions of, and they just won't watch anything animated. To them, that's meant for kids, or it's just they've decided that an entire art form has just no merit to them. And I would say the same thing can be said of video games, which obviously Roger Ebert had a similar thought about. I think it's, and to Kenny's point, it's easy to paint with a really broad brush. And I really tried to go into this with as much of an open mind as I could. It just, for whatever reason, I just had a really hard time locking into the movie. That doesn't take anything away from its importance as a universe, as a property, and what you're speaking of in terms of how much it connects with people.
And to be clear, no, I'm not coming at you. I hope that maybe you find it on this, because quite frankly, the idea of a movie where the entire point is a Pokemon is created by science and is cursing the very gift of life that he's been given, and is wrestling with the fact that humanity created Pokemon or tamed Pokemon to serve, so he feels that he should in fact become a dominant Pokemon and make humanity serve so they can get a taste of their own medicine. That feels like a fill plot. Like, that feels like something you'd be on board for. If I went to you and said, how would you punch up Pokemon? You're like, let's get more. You'd probably be like, let's get more philosophical. And that movie does. And I hope that maybe we can find you that little window in there on that one.
Well, it's interesting because especially, it also feels like a Studio Ghibli plot. Like, that's the kind of stuff that they do, and the kind of stuff that you get so excited about. But there is something, in Phil's defense, about the presentation of Pokemon that is off-putting. It is not Miyazaki or some of the other stuff that looks gorgeous. It looks, at least this movie looked crappy, and it is another layer you have to get over to engage. Now, we're doing that now, so we've done it. But like, it is hard when you, well, you know, I mean.
However,
this doesn't look awesome.
It looks great to me. That looks like a fucking five-course meal to me. I'll say this. When I was a kid, I remember, because I was, you know, I watched Pokemon. So we rented My Neighbor Totoro and Princess Mononoke when I was a kid. And if you guys listen to the Blank Check series on Miyazaki, and Griffin talks about not being into that, I had that same experience. I could not give a fuck about My Neighbor Totoro as a kid. And I thought, I could not understand Princess Mononoke, because my problem with Princess Mononoke as a kid was that this all felt foreign to me.
Sure.
And it wasn't until I saw Spirited Away, and I felt Spirited Away gave me like the Alice down the rabbit hole, where there's like a regular human character who stumbles into this fantasy world, and I was annoyed that Mononoke didn't give me that. And so with Pokemon,
I mean, Mononoke is I mean, Kenny and I, obviously we did our episode on it, and it's a lot. Like, definitely his three-course meal.
And I now love the Studio Ghibli films, and I really appreciate Miyazaki quite a bit. But I also think that that's one of those things that I kind of – there's a stance that people have where they go, you know, anime. I don't really like anime. I just like Miyazaki. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm not a big anime guy either, but there is shit out there, like Your Name is really good. Or what I watched recently was there's a film from 97 called Perfect Blue, which was like Darren Aronofsky.
It's a 99
Blue
movie.
Perfect Blue was released in America in 99, so we're going to
be doing that.
I got a fun fact for you guys. The woman that voices Ash Ketchum in the Pokemon anime in Japan is the voice of a major character in Perfect Blue, which if you haven't seen, I'm not going to spoil for you.
Great.
But it's fucking wild. But like Perfect Blue, Paprika, like there's some good shit out there. And I have that wall up too, because I know that the prominent anime fans that you normally meet in your day-to-day, you sometimes feel like they don't know the difference between good and bad anime. They just know this is anime and I like it. Yep. Like how if you grow up in New York and there are a lot of people who are like, I'm a Broadway kid, and they just like it because it's Broadway and they don't really have a sense of quality.
Yeah. Sure.
So there is shit out there. I guess my thing with when it comes to Broadway is that, they changed stuff in the Japanese film, and there's some stuff that we're never going to get here because there's some subtleties that I was watching it again for the, you know, this time, and there's shit I picked up on. Like, and this is something most people in America aren't going to get. I'm surprised I got it, but the doctor that creates Mewtwo that you see. Do you remember this at the beginning?
Yeah.
This is
nice.
You might notice he has a very distinctive, like, pointy nose. He has a very distinct look. Yeah. Yeah. He's not just, you know, any old guy. He is modeled after, and I have the name written down here, Dr. Fuji, which is the character name, is modeled after, he looks identical to Dr. Tenma, who is the creator of Astro Boy, in Astro Boy, which was the first anime series. And famously, you know, the doctor wants to revive his dead child, his dead son, makes him a robot, then realizes, oh, this robot can never replace my son, and throws him in the fucking trash, essentially, and abandons his robot child. Very AI. And then Astro Boy meets a good professor and becomes a superhero. And so we in America, unless you know that, you're never going to get that. watching it this time, having seen Astro Boy now, I thought that was really fun to look at that and go, oh, what a great parallel to draw of, okay, here's another scientist that I'm telling you with visual cues has abandoned his creation because, as we see in the Japanese version, he's only making Mewtwo because he's experimenting on Pokemon, a lower life form, so that he can learn how to clone life so he can clone his dead child, which you might recall is also the plot of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. But beside the point.
I want to jump in on that. Please. Something that has kind of come clear to me is, okay, one of the reasons I think anime is so popular in America, and it's incredibly popular in America, whether it's, you know, like the high-minded stuff or the, you know, lowbrow stuff or the stuff that's straight for television or even the manga or whatever, is because we don't actually have this form of art here. We don't have this genre. There is no – if you want to make an American animated movie dealing with these kind of adult themes in this explicit nature, there's nowhere for you. The closest we've gotten are things like Up and WALL-E are classics because they fucking touch on them.
Yep.
Because they fucking brush up against them. But if you want to make, for instance, Ex Machina – but animated, you don't have a place to do it. And that's really, really kind of bad. That's a bad thing that we do not allow for that kind of thinking here.
And what's amazing is you get little moments where it happens. Like, for example, Spider-Verse, I think, is a beautiful film and groundbreaking animated film.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so many people wrote it off at first. I can't tell you how many people the opening week of that movie – I worked at a theater, and I'd be like, oh, you should go see this. It fucking rules. And they'd be like, I'm not going to go see a kid's movie. And what it took was the fact that black critics and black audiences took the time to dig into this movie and be like, and push back. That when people were like, this is a kid's film, push back and go, no, there's stuff in here. You have to look for it and challenge them to look for it. That then it saw better success and won the Oscar and all that. And I think that there is... Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Pokemon is something profound or deep. I have watched all of these movies, and let me tell you, the drop-off is real fucking steep, real fucking fast on these. If anybody wants to follow me on Letterboxd, there's reviews I don't even remember writing that just start with, God damn it, why am I doing this, God damn it. So they're a mess, but that said...
Let's start that way.
Guys, this has been a busy week. I had to watch High Noon. I had to watch all these movies. It's been a lot. I'm really tired. It's a two Red Bull a day kind of week, man. It's rough.
I have two questions that came up a long time ago.
Please.
When Joel was giving his synopsis. One, and I think you kind of just answered this question. Mm-hmm. Is this considered a good Pokemon movie by the Pokemon Narati?
The people who have seen, if you've seen just the English version, most people are not particularly fond of it. I think it's still one of the better ones because, again, most of them are not great, man. They eventually fall into a pattern of just like, let's pick a different setting. Here's a bad Pokemon. This one's like the Middle East. This one's France, whatever. But I think that everybody who knows will tell you, you've got to see the Japanese version because the Japanese version... has shit that I understand to a degree why they cut. Again, the reason that you have Pikachu's Vacation, the short film, is because kids were getting antsy about the fact that instead of starting with the characters you know, we spend 15 minutes looking at a lab and a creature wondering why it's alive. That's grim. That kids could not tolerate the fact that when Mewtwo was a child, he met a little girl who was the clone of this guy's, the scientist's daughter, and then he watches her die in front of him, and she says, mm-hmm. and I quote, my daddy used to tell me a bedtime story that when Pokemon cry, their tears contain life. But don't cry, Mewtwo. You're alive. Life is wonderful. And then goes on to say, do I have this quote here? Some really grim shit. Yes. She says, lucky you, as she fades to her death. That she is envious that he gets to retain the gift of life. I get why you didn't put that in the kids film for America. It makes it a lot more interesting, and it makes more sense why, if we can skip, you know, at the end when Ash is turned to stone, the Pokemon all cry and he gets his gift of, you know, he gets life back. That makes more sense. And, you know, the message at the end of the American one where it's like, hey, fighting is not good, we shouldn't fight, that's not in the Japanese one. The Japanese film's conflict is about Mewtwo believing that because he's a clone, he does not have validity as a living being.
I see.
And watching the Pokemon fight, all the characters are standing around, Team Rocket and all, and they say things like, well, just because they're clones doesn't mean they should be hurt, doesn't mean they deserve to suffer. They're still living creatures, and it ends with Mewtwo concluding, like, what he says at the end of this film, even the English one, that I'm sorry, I love, is when he says, you know, I realize now that the circumstances of our birth don't define us. It's what we do with the gift of life that makes us who we are. Fuck yeah, man. That's a good line. There's some good lines in here. It's so good that the late Herbert Kane quoted it in his campaign trail. You know, we all know this. Unless you guys forgot that. But yes.
All right, so that's my first question.
Wow.
My second question is, they just kind of say, without any context, that Mew is the best ever. What are we supposed to know about Mew going into it? Because he does just seem like a run-of-the-mill cat Pokemon.
So in the games, they establish the fact that Mew is what they, in Japan, call a phantom Pokemon. Here they call an ancient Pokemon. And the idea is that the origin of all life, all Pokemon life, comes from Mew. That he contains genetic material of
multitudes.
All but really that he is a power. I mean, and that he has, some rumors say he has the secret to eternal life.
Or he's
all kinds of shit. Yeah, he's some kind of
Adam
impressive
Jesus.
And he's incredibly powerful. He's Adam Warlock, to go full Marvel on you. But he's a very powerful being, and I think that. It's also the fact that, much like Jurassic Park, they're looking for a Pokemon that they don't believe exists anymore, and they want to clone it. But the thing is, as the film demonstrates, Mew is this being of pure innocence and good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, the clone that they create becomes jaded by humanity, and because of humanity's interference in the beauty of nature, it creates a homicidal monster. I do think that there's something, and I can't get into this all the way because I'm not an expert, but there are certain things with these Pokemon that we are never going to get because they're based on ideas or characters in Japanese mythology and Japanese culture that we just don't have here. For example, Meowth, the little cat that's with Team Rocket that can talk. I was always thrown by that because I'm like, you know, Kenny asked me, why can he talk? And I was initially like, why? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you pick the cat to talk? And then it little thing is, we would never jump to this. He's not based on a cat. He's based on the Japanese and Chinese idea of the lucky cat. You know, when you go into the restaurant, they got the little cat with the wing. That's, you know, it that collects coins and brings you wealth, I should say. And that's why he's got the little coin in his head. And it makes way more sense when you understand that this is based on a mythological creature. Okay, you can buy into it.
Right.
We're talking more. So a lot of stuff. Okay.
No, that breaks the rules of the world to me. The rules of the world say to me, Pokemons can only say their names. So, is that not true?
So here's the thing:
plural Pokemon is Pokemon.
Yes. Do we want to get into the minutia of why this Meowth specifically can talk? Because I have that info here.
I want to get into because my last and final question of this run was Team Rocket ? So. Explain Team Rocket and Meowth, and you can please also explain why he talks. But their whole thing, I got to know.
All right, so I'm going to give you the quotes on why Meowth can talk, and I want to just leave it there because it's honestly not much better. I have no way to explain it, but I just love it. Meowth can talk, as we learned in the episode Go West, Young Meowth, episode 70, because as a young kitten, he saw the film That Darn Meowth and decided to move to Hollywood to make it as a big star. While there, he met a female Meowth and tried to impress her, but she spurned him and said she preferred humans, so he painstakingly taught himself to speak and walk on two legs. She still rejects him, and now, neither fully Pokemon nor fully human, he joins Team Rocket because Rocket was the first human word he ever learned. And that's why he turns.
That's
evil.
A great explanation. Great explanation.
That's incredibly interesting. So a very determined Pokemon who's not constantly trying to learn how to fight and being enslaved, I guess, could learn different skills, new skills.
There is something to, once you get into the anime, there is something to the questions of Pokemon and their identities and personalities that feels like, I don't know if you guys are comic book fans, but I highly recommend, a guy named Mark Russell did a Flintstones book recently. And it was like a, you know, philosophical Flintstones book that gets into how fucked up it is that they use these animals as appliances.
Yeah.
I bet. And does a whole arc about a baby mammoth vacuum cleaner that breaks down and how they just leave him in the shed to die. And it's grim. And Pokemon touches on that sometimes. Not a lot. They don't justify it because they're still making creatures essentially dogfight. But there are elements to explore in this of, hey, that's kind of fucked up. And that's kind of Mewtwo's vibe, is he's brought into this world, made, as he points out in the Japanese version, not by God. He's brought into this world, and he's looking at it saying, this is insane. This is not okay. And it's not until he sees, again, like Pikachu and these other creatures step forward and go, no, these are my friends. We have like a symbiotic relationship, that he starts to grapple with, okay, maybe I'm making a judgment call here. But
Can I just say that I remember seeing the trailer for Detective Pikachu whenever it was. And there's a real sort of money shot moment where Mewtwo like shows up in like Times Square. Like there's like a whatever. And I remember someone in my row, someone I didn't know, went, oh fuck. And I was just like, I don't know what's happening, but apparently this is a very big deal. Mewtwo is a very big deal.
That surprises me because we live on opposite coasts. I don't know how we were in the same theater for that.
but truly, like, Mewtwo is like next level for people.
Because it is the only character that is allowed. I mean, later other movies have more Pokemon to talk, and it pisses me off because it's from a narrative perspective, it's a cheat. It's way more fun when you kind of have to tell a story with characters that can't talk.
Right.
But Mewtwo is different to me because he is the one character that is allowed to show up and interrupt this world and comment on it. And not in like a Deadpool quirky way, but that because he is not a natural part of this world, he is allowed to show up and as a character disrupt the status quo. And what I think is interesting with this, what I enjoy watching it from, you know, multiple viewings, is the fact that the arc they give him, where you watch it in the beginning, his character is being, you know, mistreated by his keepers. These giant robot arms come out and grab him. He's, you know, being exploited. And you're supposed to sympathize with him. And then, of course, later, when he builds his Enter the Dragon Temple, you know, for the fight and all that.
Right.
And he's taking these Pokemon to clone them. Ash intervenes, and he's being grabbed up by the arms. And they're kind of creating this parallel here. And I think that It's an interesting thing to sort of grapple with in terms of just, you've created a character who is pointing out the flaws of this universe. You've created a philosophical Statler and Waldorf in the form of an exceptionally powerful Pokemon. And it's a thing where he's kind of, even though, you know, Mew can't talk, when him and Mew are having their exchange toward the end, it is a much more simplified version of your T'Challa Killmonger conflict of...
Yeah,
I get it. I get it why this guy's mad. This is kind of fucked up. And
yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that there's no question, for me anyway, that Mewtwo is the most interesting character. He grapples with real existential doubt. I mean, he is a antagonist, and I don't want to call him a villain because he's not really a villain, but like, he's an antagonist to, you know, to our other characters in the best sort of way, which is that he's dimensional and that there's really sort of things that he's grappling with. I certainly sense that, and you certainly have given me more to chew on in terms of what the universe is and what it all kind of means. And truthfully, you know, had I known all of this going into the film, I probably would have had certainly more to connect with. But to your point, you know, Detective Pikachu, and then in turn this movie, it's just very hard to engage with if you don't have some sense of an understanding of the universe.
And yet, I would counter, and I've mentioned this, you know, with other things too, and talking to other people, I would counter that that's not necessarily a knock on the film or any film like that.
Sure.
Again, I mentioned Wrath of Khan before and saying you didn't watch Star Trek and going into that. But the other thing is, like, you know, I think that I am not going to fault, say, and this is a very different and much better movie, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to fault Parasite for the fact that there are elements of South Korean culture that are inherent to fully understanding that film that I do not have.
Sure.
I'm not going to fault that. And I'm not going to, like, again, we're not going to know that the professor is modeled after Astro Boy, but knowing that adds a nice layer to this, and I think
totally.
That,
and I loved Astro Boy as a kid. I mean, Astro Boy was...
I think that... I mean, I think there's validity to what everyone's saying. Like, you shouldn't fault them for making a choice. They made a choice. But you do have to acknowledge that that choice necessarily limited the audience.
For sure.
So, if... And this is kind of what we went back and forth with Jessica in terms of Detective Pikachu versus Sonic.
Yeah.
Sonic may be a less interesting movie, and Sonic may be less like the video game, but I thought Sonic was basically a masterstroke in terms of getting newbies into that world, which I think if I were making the film, and you can do whatever you want, but if I were making the film from a studio level, that would have been my goal. And that would have been my goal with Detective Pikachu as well. You have enough goodwill from audiences at large, from the viewing from the movie going public, that I would have made it a little less esoteric. They can do what they want; it doesn't make it a worth movie. Of course,
I don't. You, when it comes to these kind of properties, and I say this as a man who wrote for a comic book website for several years and dealt with the comment sections, you have the opposite of goodwill with these things. And that's what so many comic book movies have run into. That's where the DC movies hit a snag for a while, which is they had this idea of, we've already got the fans showing up. Let's worry about getting the other people in.
Oh, we're saying different things.
Okay, because I'm saying
that there's a certain amount of goodwill from the movie going public who are not Pokemon fans going into it.
I mean, I think a perfect example of that is me going into Detective Pikachu.
That's what I'm saying.
Knowing nothing about Pokemon and being like, okay, I hear Pokemon's great. I'd love to see this movie.
Pikachu had enough crossover appeal where people were willing to see what this thing is about, and their gateway drug was going to be Detective Pikachu. I 100% understand what you're saying. I think you met Michael, and I think what you have to do when you come at a property like this is make a decision. Are we going to go hard towards the diehards? Or are we going to do what Sonic did and kind of ignore the diehards and go hard towards the movie going public? And there's not necessarily
it was more successful than Detective Pikachu.
It's very hard to thread the needle and also be successful, because I've also, you know, it depends a lot on the property. It depends a lot on how naturally esoteric and alienating the property is, because so often I think nerds like us love a property. I would put Ghostbusters into this. This bucket, where my issue with the Paul Feig book Ghostbusters is that it felt like Ghostbusters light. Not because women were starring it, because there was nothing happening in terms of that story. And I've already seen two Ghostbusters movies and 100 Ghostbusters cartoons. I'm prepared for more, and I do think that's part of why it was a failure. But in this situation, they made their decision, and I think that they kind of fell flat. But
I mean, I recognize that there's certainly, like I said, there's shit that I've gone into without any context and been completely lost. I saw Sonic. I thought Sonic was fun. I got no problems with Sonic, but I also recognize that part of what I had fun with Sonic is the fact that it felt like the video game movies they make in 1993, where they're just like, I don't know, Street Fighter, Jean-Claude Van Damme, fine. There's a nostalgia element in that, in terms of, like, I almost missed when they missed the point. I respect the hell out of the fact that Detective Pikachu, like you said, made a choice and went. Mm-hmm. And even if I don't like when movies make choices, where I don't like the choices movies make, I love anytime you make a big swing and just go,
me too.
Yeah, fuck it. This is what we're doing. I don't, you know, like,
I fully agree. And I didn't, I mean, I didn't hate the Detective Pikachu. I think I just was sort of like hoping for more, hoping for something that was going to be not just, I mean, I don't know that I was hoping for Sonic, but I think I saw that trailer and I was like, this thing could be more than what I have thought Pokemon is.
Mm-hmm. This could be a Pokemon for the rest of us.
Right, exactly.
If that makes
Pokemon
any
sense. Pokemon for everyone.
Like, there's just, yeah. I wish I could think of a really good example of a property that was able to do that and even, you know, kind of emerge bigger while still staying true to its core audience.
Something, I just can't think of it.
Yeah.
But I also totally understand the gamble because, you know, a couple years prior, Pokemon Go comes out and suddenly everybody's on their fucking phone and it becomes a thing of there is a large enough audience. I think that the thing is the problem with, you know, Detective Pikachu fell flat, you know, monetarily for a number of reasons and not all of them are necessarily the fault of the film, as is the case so often. I mean, let's face it, even Pokemon the first movie might not have done as well if it had opened the same weekend as Toy Story 2, you know? Like, there's certain factors, which, by the way, let me just say, you mentioned...
I think...
Yeah, go ahead. I just want to make clear, you know, you mentioned having Griffin Newman on for Toy Story 2, and I just want to personally thank him, the fact that he fell on that sword and left me the best animated film of 1999. I really appreciate it. That's very charitable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's agree with you. They picked a great weekend. It was a smart weekend to drop the movie. They didn't really have any competition at the time. It obviously did quite well. It had a pretty steep drop off. It did real big boffo business up top, and then it didn't have really the legs domestically as it did overseas. But yeah, I mean, listen, you set it up top, and it really kind of made me have to re-engage or sort of reconfigure the way I thought of this franchise. When you think of it as a $92 billion empire that's bigger than any other franchise on the planet, the only one that comes close is Hello Kitty, which is number two. Yeah. When you think of it on that level, you really have to recalibrate the way that you approach this thing. And that to me is a sign that Detective Pikachu kind of didn't really capitalize on the potential of what they could have done with this thing. They tried to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted to apply to the fans to love it, and they wanted to make it accessible to new people. And that's kind of, to Kenny's point, how you end up with a Ghostbusters. Like,
I got it. I got a movie that is part of a somewhat dormant, totally beloved franchise.
Okay.
Very esoteric, very hard to get into. It didn't give an inch in this new movie, and it was fucking crazy successful. Does anyone want to guess? In every way.
I got nothing. Mike, you got anything?
Mad Max Fury Road.
That's different. I gotta step in here and say that's very different. And I will tell you why. I will tell you why.
Tell me why.
Because you can't compare the two. Mad Max has absolutely no fucking continuity in any of those movies. These movies exist to be watched in a vacuum because there's no world where you would ever look at somebody and go, well, if you want to watch The Road Warrior, you have to watch Mad Max 1. You don't. These movies have...
Right.
They recast the actor, and in Fury Road, he now has a kid of a different gender than he was dealing with before. These movies... Mad Max Fury Road is a soft reboot of the franchise. There is no reference to anything else that happened in any of those other movies. And I think that in Mad Max, all you have to know for this movie is you walk in and go, got it, post-apocalypse. I've seen the California Love music video. I'm ready to roll on this shit. I got it. Now, if halfway through Fury Road, he's talking to Furiosa and he goes, don't worry, I got this, because there was that one time with Lord Humongous where he said, walk away, just walk away. Yeah! Then I'd say
it's not about continuity.
This
argument has nothing to do with continuity. That's not the argument I'm making for Sonic either.
There's no rules to do with the Mad Max universe. What do you have to know?
But there is a tone, an unrelenting tone and style to the Mad Max universe that could have been soft-pedaled theoretically for a larger audience, because it is one of the most gruesome and disgusting big budget films I have ever seen, and it's more gruesome and disgusting than the first three. And it didn't soft pedal it at all. It doubled down on all of it and was the most successful of the franchise and the most successful big budget movie of my memory.
There's two other factors in that, which is one, that genre and that world has been copied so many times that we are used to it as a trope. Post-apocalyptic wasteland is it post-apocalyptic wasteland is a thing that everyone knows. All you have to do in any cartoon or you turn on fucking Fairly Odd Parents, they have a guy in a hockey mask in the desert. You know what that vibe is. I knew the Mad Max vibe before I ever saw a Mad Max movie because that's a vibe. In addition to that, I think what helped Mad Max was the fact that it had the critical acclaim that it had. And I'm not taking that away from it. But that was a very hype movie to the point where when it gets its Oscar nominations, you've got a whole new audience going to that and saying, I guess I have to see this thing. The same way that
I do hear work it all true. Yeah, I mean, because I'm right. All true. Everything you said is true. But the point I'm making is when George Miller goes, who made it, Phil? Universal?
Warner Brothers.
When George Miller goes back to Warner Brothers and says, I want to do another Mad Max. They had to have a discussion where they said, okay, but is this going to be the kind of Mad Max that could bring in 10-year-olds? Because we are going to be spending a ton of money on this. Or is this the kind of Mad Max that's going to be an R-rated movie dealing with adult themes for grown-ups? And when they decided that they're going to do the latter, that was because I believe in part that they knew that if you do Mad Max halfway, like Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, you are going to draw the ire of all the people who are crazy about the franchise. And I think Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, you don't have to know one thing. I guess you don't have to remember anything about Raiders. You don't have to remember anything about this franchise to go into that movie.
This is an unwinnable fight. So there's two franchises that came to mind as you guys were talking about this. And I'm not sure that either of them are exactly the right fit, but I think you'll understand where I'm coming from. The first is Creed. It feels like that's a movie that not just relaunched that franchise, but it kind of just, it put it in a completely different sphere. And it really kind of changed the perception of the Rocky movies. And open it up to a very different audience. So
you want me to jump on Creed now or you want to do your second one?
The other one that I was going to say is Planet of the Apes.
Okay, so Planet of the Apes is an interesting one. Rocky was a dead franchise. Rocky was a franchise that had, and I like Rocky Balboa, but Rocky Balboa is this little thing in the middle of this island of nothingness. Rocky V is terrible. And Rocky also doesn't have any other media anywhere.
Correct.
The fandom of Rocky doesn't really hold on to anything in terms of internal rules that matter. Correct. So I don't think there was any blowback in terms of let's just make this as good as possible.
They were starting from zero.
They're starting from Ryan Coogler probably was like, look, I want to make this a really fucking great movie. And they just said, go make it a really great movie. Planet of the Apes is different. Mike, you want to talk about
I just want to say that I think that one thing we're missing here when we're talking about those compared to this, hear me out, is the fact that Mad Max is a 30-plus-year-old franchise. Right?
Correct.
So it is a franchise that kind of came to, and I don't mean to sound too young, came to your generation, right? And that was something you guys saw.
Yes.
And my generation picked up through osmosis. We didn't see Road Warrior, but we knew who Mad Max was because we saw it parodied in Animaniacs.
Sure.
Rocky, even my significant other has never seen a Rocky film. She's Russian, so I'm afraid to watch Rocky IV with her. Yeah. But she's never seen one. But she knows who Rocky is because Rocky, the character in the franchise, is iconic in a way that it is picked up through osmosis. Planet of the Apes is picked up through osmosis. You don't have to see one of these fucking films, but anybody sees that Statue of Liberty submerged. Now, here's the thing with Pokemon. It is that way for a much smaller demographic because it was only in the 90s, and it did saturate the culture for a certain generation who, even if you didn't play the games, you heard kids talking about it on school year, you learned about it the same way that I, even though I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies as a kid, fucking knew what The Matrix was and shit. I guess what I was trying to drive out with Max or even with Creed or anything like that is that there were a lot of people who went to go see Creed, and even though they never saw a Rocky movie, they knew Sylvester Stallone was Rocky. They've seen Rocky with his fists up. They've seen him going, yo, Adrian, running up the stairs. And so what that was doing is that movie plays off of you understanding the iconography. The thing I would raise is that let's talk about why Star Wars does not do well in China. Because Force Awakens did gangbusters here, bombed in China, because China did not have Star Wars. Donnie Yen, who was in Rogue One, didn't know what the fuck Star Wars was. And so Force Awakens plays really well here because we look at it and go, it's a great entry point for the series. We look at it and go, this is a great jumping on point. But when you're in China and you see Harrison Ford doing the, it's true, all of it, they go, who the fuck is this? What is this? Why do they have laser swords? None of this makes any sense to me. I think that what we forget is how much pop culture we consume that we think anyone can watch and get, but requires such a cultural osmosis that we only picked up, even if we didn't watch these movies, people my age, your age, we know Casablanca, we know these things because they were parodied on Looney Tunes. They're parodied on shit. We picked it up through osmosis. And for somebody, and I have this experience personally because I'm, you know, again, my significant other and I were catching up on albums and shit that like I knew for sure and she never knew. There's so much that like she heard her first Elvis album this year and suddenly it unlocked so many things. She's like, I saw this, I saw that, and now this makes sense. And so I think that when we talk about Creed or Mavericks or anything like that, the iconography exists in the cultural lexicon the same way that Star Wars, the iconography exists in the cultural lexicon so much that you could take someone who has never seen a Star Wars to Force Awakens and they would be able to at least pick up Han Solo. I think I heard that Harrison Ford, Han Solo, he's a cowboy. Okay. You pick it up through osmosis. So it's easier to get people on board because while George Miller, in this case, you know, did another Mad Max and he stuck true to the franchise, cultural osmosis has allowed us to kind of go lock in and go, I get what this is. Now, we talk about something like Mononoke and how we couldn't grapple with Mononoke at first. If I was in Japan and I grew up with these ideas of forest spirits and all that, I would watch it and as Miyazaki intended and kind of go, oh, yeah, of course I get it. Forest spirits, I'm with this. I vibe with this. I totally understand. But then it comes here and, you know, the companies that are distributing it have to kind of sit down and go, God, what the fuck? What do I do with this? Yeah. I don't. How do I make this work?
Yeah, for sure.
And Pokemon has that struggle where there's shit in those movies or in those anime and those movies that rely on Japanese cultural references. And so instead you get clunky American references, like there's a fucking Minnesota Vikings joke in Pokemon, the first movie, which I love because that establishes that Minnesota is a real place in the Pokemon world, and I'm all for it. I think that's great. I want to see Fargo Pokemon. That should be Detective Pikachu too.
I'd watch the shit out of that. So let's rate this movie,
okay,
shall we? Did you see this film in 99?
Wait, Michael, just quickly before we rate it, who the fuck is Team Rocket?
Right, okay. So Team Rocket is an evil criminal syndicate. So the idea is that in this world, Pokemon are something that you train, but you have a relationship with and a partnership with, and there's a certain established world, and Team Rocket wants to disrupt that. They want to exploit Pokemon. They want to... They're the bad guys. They are...
Are they always the bad guys? Because they seem like they got some Snidely and Whiplash vibe to me.
So here's the thing. In the series, in the first... Well, here's the thing. In the first... series or first two series of the anime, they are the bad guys. They're the primary antagonists. They are some, and even in the games, Team Rocket is like a primary or secondary antagonist that is there to interrupt your journey to the Pokemon League, right? And you thwart their plans. When you move into the movies, because the movies have a different antagonist, because they have Mewtwo, Jesse and James sort of form the role of
Jesse and James,
they rolled it. But they form the role of kind of like those two secondary characters to have in Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress or like C-3PO and R2-D2 in Star Wars, where their job at this point is to provide not just comic relief, but to be on a secondary separate adventure that helps give information, if you will. You know, it's that they're bumbling buffoons. And even in the series, Jesse and James particularly are set up as fuck-ups. Mm-hmm. In fact, in the episode I mentioned, Showdown of the Poke Corral, they are on their way to their boss's place to get chewed out and probably fired, but at that same time Mewtwo leaps out of the building and blows it up, and the boss is like, yeah, whatever, do whatever. They are an antagonistic organization, but by the time we reach this film and so on, they kind of more become a secondary feature, more like bumps in the road rather than a particular antagonist.
Now I know. It's been years for me. I'm so happy to find that out.
Well, I mean, they do tell you, Kenny, they do tell you to prepare for trouble and make it double, to unite all people within our nation, protect the world from devastation.
So, Michael, you saw this in 99.
Oh, fuck yeah, I did. Yeah.
So what are your ratings?
So 99, now I've been a
free podcast, post podcast.
I've been afraid to answer this because I want to remind your listeners that I was 8 or 9 years old when I saw this. So I've tried to be as objective.
I don't think they're going
to
judge you.
So for me in 99, when I was a child, I would have given this a 98. And the reason being,
sure,
hear me out. The reason being there is one thing in this movie that I took issue with as a kid. These are one of the early movies, this one and then the sequel that I hated as a kid. They are the only some of the early movies where I remember being a kid and still having a critical enough mind to go, hold on. And my problem with this film as a kid was I hate, because we didn't really get into the plot too much, but I hate that at the end, Mewtwo wipes their memories. As a kid, I hated that as a storytelling trope, because I'm like, I couldn't articulate it as a kid, but it felt like, well, this was meaningless then, because these characters don't grow from that.
Yeah.
Now,
like season one of Homeland.
Yeah.
Yeah. This does get justified.
Yeah. The whole like fucking rewind at the end. Yeah.
Now, however, this does get justified in the 22nd film, Genesect.
Stop it.
Where Mewtwo returns. In Genesect and The Legend Awakens, we see that Mewtwo has learned something from their last encounter and has become a lot more open to humans. I watched all of these fucking things, you guys, and it was useless. I didn't even mention it.
I watched them all, and it didn't matter.
I never brought it up.
We could sense it. It's like when an actor knows the backstory, but it's not in the script. We could sense this.
It's like I always say in the room, it's not important that it's in the script, but it's important that we in this room know.
Exactly.
Is it that you sense it because of that, or you sense it the way that when you walk into like a VFW hall, you see a guy and you're like, oh, he's seen some shit. Like, that's just got a look.
What is your rating free podcast? Yeah.
Free podcast, I would say that I gave it a 75, but the Japanese version I would give an 85. And that's partly because my way for judging this and rating this, and believe me, I've thought about this since I knew I was doing this, my rating for this is judging it based on what it's trying to do.
Sure.
You know, and not so extreme as like, you know, saying that I don't like a comedy because it didn't scare me, but like there is something to it where I'm like, I came into this wanting a Pokemon movie.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Pokemon movie, it delivered on what it was telling me it was going to deliver. I didn't go into this looking for a philosophical drama. I got a little bit of that, and I went, great, that's icing on the cake. But for me, a person who likes this franchise and vibes with it, it delivered what I wanted it to deliver. So that's where I put it for the pre-podcast.
Kenny.
The one thing I literally took one note on it, and the one note was, didn't Frozen steal this ending? Didn't Frozen steal this ending?
Yes.
I did see this before.
Oh,
I saw it with Rollins probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I remember being totally shocked by the depth of this movie, knowing almost nothing about Pokemon. I had no reason to give it my full attention. I was not, doing a podcast on it. So I don't really want to rate it, but I didn't go into this movie totally cold. I knew what it was about, I had seen, I'd certainly seen it. It's certainly been playing in front of me. I watched this movie full attention. It's not my cup of tea, but I gave it a 48, which I think is pretty good for a movie like this. I was touched at the end. And I actually thought the Blessed Union of Souls song that Michael so graciously graced us with, there was something almost delicious about it being used at the end in the way it was used. And seeing these little adorable Pokemon slapping each other. What's the duck face Pokemon?
Psyduck.
Psyduck slapping the other Psyduck. And then getting slapped by Psyduck in return and the tears. It's very pure. I think that people don't understand how pure this franchise is. I can't go higher.
I mean, you can. There's plenty of numbers.
This is why I can't.
There's a whole lot of them.
This is why I can't go higher. Because I think there are only two paths. I think you watch Pokemon the first movie. You give it a 48. You say, I'm happy I've done that. You move on with your life. Or you watch Pokemon the first movie, you give it a 52,
you watch Pokemon 2000, and then you become Mike Natale sitting there for three straight days obsessed with this franchise, and I cannot recommend a gateway drug to our listeners. That being said, I'm extremely happy we did this podcast. Extremely happy we had you on. Like, this was significantly more than I thought you would get for this movie. So thank you for doing the work and carrying this podcast as we expected you to.
I did not see this in 99. I came into this podcast and I had it at a 50 because
you had it higher than Kenny did.
I had it at a 50 because there was a part of me that was like, listen, I don't know if this is for me. Like, this just doesn't feel like it's something that's for me. That being said, I wouldn't tell a person not to watch this. Like, if they wanted, to Kenny's point, I am the opposite of Kenny, which is, if you want the drug, here's the drug if you really want it. having listened to you.
God, you really were my freshman year roommate. Anyway, go on.
And having listened to you for the past 2 hours talk about this and give it sort of a richness of context that I did not have going into it, I'm now leaving the movie at a 60.
Whoa!
I think that.
Yeah!
I think
Whoa!
That.
Yes! Yes! Oh, that's man!
Cool. That's cool.
Because I believe that with the proper context, this could be a legitimately great movie. I just don't think I went into it with the right headspace. I just didn't know enough about it. And
you know what I love about you, Phil? You always get there. You always get there. You are not intransient.
No, I'm not intransient.
Is that the word, or intransigent?
Yeah, I'm not.
I don't have any information that's not Pokemon anymore. Don't expect me to know this shit.
So either way, I want to thank you for not.
You're
just
not
the time you
intransigent
put in
is the correct word. You're not intransigent.
You know, you put a lot of work into this episode. You watched a lot of Pokemon. We are incredibly grateful for that. We're incredibly grateful for your support of our podcast. Obviously, I can't wait to be on your podcast again. And just thank you. Thank you for putting in the time, man. We really appreciate it.
Listen, guys, I appreciate this. You know why? Because I'll tell you right now, I'm about to make $100. Because in 1998, at my cousin Sabrina's second birthday, my uncle was so sick of me talking about Pokemon that he said, I'll give you $100 if in 10 years you still care about this. And now it is 20 goddamn years later, and I'm on a podcast about it. So
yeah,
I'm making
send him the link.
I'm making a profit no matter what. You know, even if I couldn't get Kenny's number up, I'm still making bank on this one. So I win.
So next week, my number curious your thoughts on what we're covering next week, Michael.
What are we doing next week?
We're doing Stigmata next week.
Okay.
The Patricia Arquette movie. We got Lewis Peitzman coming on to talk about that. Do you have thoughts on Stigmata?
I saw that in 99, and there's no way. I still get it confused with that goddamn Kevin Bacon movie that came out this year. Stir of Echoes, yeah. And now
so you never saw Stigmata?
No. Phil,
I
know what I do with my time.
Watch every other movie, not Stigmata.
Yeah, exactly.
I watched these things.
Movie.
Yeah, I thought you would have seen this one.
He casually
dropped yesterday that he had seen every Best Picture winner. And
that's
like,
crazy.
And we were talking about Westerns. And I did a Western. I'm like, Cimarron, not really a Western. He's like, I've seen it. It's a Western. Cimarron, Cavalcade.
No, Cimarron.
Cimarron, which was the third Best Picture winner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a 3.5-hour prairie movie.
And super problematic. Hey, guys.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, it's funny. It's almost like I was stuck in my house with nothing to do for months. Some of us don't have jobs. And if I can plug anything, it's I'm unemployed. Someone help me. I'm about to go downhill. I'm losing my
unemployment. You might very well enjoy Stigmata if and when you get around to watching it.
I was going to ask something, but I can't remember. Do you have something? What were we just talking about?
I don't know.
Phil was talking about Stigmata. Best I was picture. Talking about how I'm painfully unemployed.
Do you listen to the Best Pick podcast?
I do when I can. I mean, obviously my podcast consumption has been a little lower because I don't have anywhere to drive anymore. But I do when I can.
Best Pick Podcast is the greatest.
Thank you so much for being here,
no
Michael.
Problem.
We really appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back.
I will just say, if folks want to hear you guys talking about it, by the time this comes out, we might not have episodes up yet. We're working on retooling the podcast, but if you, I don't know when this is coming out.
Yeah, this is probably going to be up in mid-September.
So yeah, I think we're looking at an October launch, but if you subscribe to You're Missing Out now on wherever you get your podcasts, you will be hearing Phil and Kenny talking about Sunset Boulevard and High Noon, respectively. It is, I will tell you, as a longtime fan of your show, and if you guys listening are fans of your of this show, it's great to hear you guys separate, because I mean it, because you really get a sense of the different approaches that you guys bring to this. Like, we were talking about it on off mic on our show, like how you really, I mean it sincerely, like you get to see how this show, why this show works, because the questions that Phil, you ask about a movie are very different than the kind of questions Kenny asks about a movie. And it means that for us, we're interrogating these movies in very different ways. And the fact that you guys bring that together every week, it's delightful. I'm a huge fan, and it is truly an honor to get to be on here.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you.
Appreciate that.
Yes, and it's nice to call you a friend now, too. So it's been great.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.